Well, good morning, everyone. I'll take that silence as a good opportunity to begin. I know it's maybe a minute or two, so folks might still be coming in before we actually start, but I want to allow Mark and Jocelyn all the time that we have this morning for their presentation. I know as I'm watching, many of you already know, I think, Mark and Jocelyn and some of their family, but they've been married now for 12 years and have two daughters, Margot, who I understand is in daycare, maybe over at Hillcrest somewhere right now, and Isla, who we've seen come in and out, and hopefully will be joining us again in not too long. And they currently work at the Carpenters Church in Lubbock, Texas. Jocelyn is the director of development for Carpenters Church, but also is a theater director. Do you have any shows coming up or anything recent? No. So
no,
that is taking plenty of time. Yeah, I imagine so. And Mark, along with work at the Carpenter Church, teaches at Lubbock Christian University, teaches theology and the history of Christian thought, and also preaches from time to time, part-time, or regularly at the Gale Church of Christ.
Actually, now I'm the interim minister at the Vandalia Church.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right. So good. So we can correct our bios. The interim minister at the Vandalia Church of Christ, which is in
Lovely.
Okay, very good. All right, so get to regular preaching ministry as well. They have lots of ministry experience over the years that they have worked in both rural and urban churches and have worked in campuses overseas and also, of course, here in the United States. And so they have a lot of diverse ministry experience that they'll bring to bear in their class this morning, Redeeming Charity, Loving Every Neighbor as Yourself.
Thanks a lot. Good morning. It's good to see you all. I'm going to speak for about 15 minutes, and then Jocelyn's going to talk about her work at Carpenters for a few minutes, and then we were hoping to have some conversation at the end.
Could you load the video, or how do you do that?
I think it should be good. I did not load it.
Should we do that while you're talking?
Yes, perhaps.
Sorry, y'all.
Begin with one of my favorite lines from Merton. A happiness that is sought for ourselves alone can never be found, for a happiness that is diminished by being shared is not big enough to make us happy. Now he's tapping into an old question. What is it that leads to human flourishing? I think he's not just talking about a superficial level of comfort or happiness. He's talking about human wholeness. And this is a question that spans every religious tradition that goes through Eastern and Western philosophy. What is it that leads to human flourishing? And one of the common answers that I think Merton is tapping into here is the notion that the highest goods, the things that are the most valuable, the things that genuinely give us life, are the things that aren't diminished by being shared. Non-finite goods, in other words, things that aren't the objects of competition, for example. Things like money and power, possessions, property. These are finite goods. These are objects of competition. These are zero-sum goods, right? If I give some of my possessions away, I have exactly that amount less of that possession. If I give some money away, I have exactly that amount less money. But there are a few things that aren't like that, right? There are some things that can be shared without being lost. Things like knowledge, things like love, friendship. These are things that aren't diminished by being shared. In fact, they increase when they're shared. And so Merton is echoing this line of thinking that goes back through the Christian tradition, not to mention other traditions. But this is basically what Augustine and Thomas Aquinas, but also Aristotle and Plato argue. The highest goods, the things that actually make us whole, aren't diminished when they're shared. Now, what I want to do is flesh out one particular facet of that conversation about human wholeness, about true happiness, true life. And I want to frame it in terms of virtue. There are a variety of ways of thinking about morality and human flourishing. You can frame the conversation in terms of ends, in terms of goals, targets, right? Effects, consequences. That's an approach to ethics called teleology. Another approach is framed in terms of deeds, actions. Not so much, the first question in this case wouldn't therefore be, what's the right effect that I'm looking for? What's the right consequence? But rather, what's the right action that I should perform apart from its consequences? This is called deontology. A third major approach in moral philosophy is called virtue ethics. And this is the one that I'm most inclined towards. The first question for the virtue ethicist is not what effect should we seek, what consequence should we aim for, nor is their first question, what should I do? What action should I perform? Their first question is, who should I be? What type of person should I be? That's Aristotle's first question. He frames ethics in terms of identity, in other words. And when he fleshes that out, he uses the language of ruts in the soul. Not just singular actions or deeds, but habits, character traits, tendencies, ruts in the soul. One of the images that Rebecca Kenindick DeYoung uses is the image of a snowy hillside. You can imagine this fantasy in Abilene, Texas. But imagine a winter sledding party. You're at the top of the hill. You've all got your sleds and your winter clothes on, and a fresh layer of snow awaits you, right? Now, what happens when the first person goes down the hill? Nothing, really. They get stuck, right? They have to almost claw their way down the hill. But as you keep proceeding through that path, it becomes smoother, quicker, easier, right? This is what Aristotle has in mind when he's thinking of a rut in the soul, something that becomes easier through practice, through habituation. Something that becomes a character trait, a tendency, an inclination. Something that's rooted in your very soul. And so what he's seeking is not just to identify a list of good deeds, but to think through the sorts of ruts in your soul that we need to be excellent people. What exactly does this mean? One of my favorite stories to sort of illustrate this is a story that apparently Winston Churchill told just before Britain entered World War II. It's a story about a zoo in Berlin. And at this zoo was this miraculous spectacle. A lion and a lamb in the same cage together, getting along like the best of friends. People are flocking to this zoo by the thousands, traveling from around the world to see this miracle. They can't believe what they're seeing. And so finally, one of the tourists goes up to the zookeeper and says, I don't understand it. It's inconceivable. Where did you find this lion? And the zookeeper says, well, the lion's not the hard part. It's the lamb. We have to get a new one every day. I thought that was fun. Now, I tell that story in this context because I think it illustrates what Aristotle is getting at when he's thinking of ethics. You can change the external circumstances all you want. You can create a facade as beautiful as you want. But until the lion has a different set of tastes, that lamb is going to die every day, right? Until the lion has a different inclination. Until the lion no longer craves lamb, that lamb is going to get slaughtered every day. The lion needs, in other words, a different heart, a different set of ruts in the soul, a different set of inclinations. This is a theme that I think runs through Scripture. Isaiah 29:13, these people draw near to me with their words and honor me with lip service, but their hearts are far from me. We see this echoed again and again and again. A question not just of an external facade or a list of good deeds, but of the inclination of the heart. 1 Corinthians 13, if I speak in the tongues of mortals and of angels but don't have love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge, if I have all faith so as to remove mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give away all my possessions and hand over my body so that I may boast but do not have love, I gain nothing. Those are strong words. Now, what exactly is Paul talking about when he's thinking of Christian love? I think one helpful way to get a grip on Paul's thinking here is to contrast it with one of the classical Christian vices, which is sloth. Sloth versus love. Now, what is sloth? The stereotype that we have of sloth is something like this, right? Laziness, lack of activity, right? Slowness. This is sloth. This is what it means to be a sloth. But we find an interesting counterexample to that stereotype. This is also a point that Rebecca Canindic DeYoung makes in her book, Glittering Vices. She points to Phil Connors, character for one of my favorite movies, Groundhog Day. If you've ever seen the movie, or if you've never seen it, it's a story about a weatherman who is just miserable. He's a misanthrope. He hates everyone and everything around him. He hates his job, and above all, he hates Punxsutawney Phil, which is the groundhog in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. And he has to go and cover this miserable story year after year after year with all of these horrendous people. And so the movie is about one of those years where he goes to Pennsylvania to cover this groundhog for Groundhog's Day. And what he discovers after going through the day in misery and repeating the story that he's done countless times before, he discovers that he's stuck in a time loop. And so he has to live through the same day over and over and over. And the story is about what he chooses to do in that situation. What would you do if you had to relive the same day over and over and over again? What sorts of choices would you make? And one of the things that you see Phil doing is that he works very hard. He works very hard at serving himself. He stays very busy. Right. In particular, he's devoted to getting control of Rita, who's another character. He wants to manipulate her and control her into falling for him. And so he memorizes every possible detail that he can. He relives the same day over and over and over again, slipping in little questions, trying to figure out what is she like, what does she dislike, what would make her fall in love with him. He wants to get control of her and create this facade so that she'll fall for him. He works very hard at this, but he's still a sloth. In other words, what you find in Phil Connors is a perfect example of a busy sloth, someone who works very hard but still remains a sloth. And that's because sloth is not simply laziness or lack of activity, but laziness about love. You can be a sloth. You can be a lazy, inactive sloth, or you can be an overactive sloth and still be slothful. Be lazy about love, in other words. So how do we resist this? To form love as a rut in the soul, what we need is not just self-centered inactivity or self-centered busyness. We need to love the other in a way that is inclined towards their good. In other words, to love the other is not simply to act kindly, to create a facade, despite a will to the contrary. Love and good deeds, in other words, are not the same thing. The opposite of sloth is not busyness, which I think is one of our greatest temptations, but rather the presence of love in the will. This is the language of Thomas Aquinas and the language of Aristotle, where the will, the heart, is inclined towards the good of the other. Not just a set of outward activities, but a will that's inclined towards the other person's flourishing. And this requires of us a willingness to acknowledge and a will to overcome our inclinations against genuinely loving the other. Not merely acting kindly while thinking and seeing as before. This is one of the themes that I think runs through Paul's letters. That in Christ, we are called to think and see and hear. We're called to perceive. We're called to know ourselves and the world around us, our neighbors and our enemies, differently than we otherwise would. Take, for instance, this passage from 1 Corinthians 2. Those who are spiritual discern all things, and they are themselves subject to no one else's scrutiny. For who has known the mind of the Lord so as to instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. Notice that when Paul's talking about what it means to follow Christ, he's not just talking about a new list of good deeds. He's not just talking about staying busy. He's talking about total transformation. A mind that knows differently than it otherwise would. A mind that perceives the world around it differently than it otherwise would. A mind that sees the neighbor differently than it otherwise would. Thinking, seeing, and hearing differently. Now, one facet of this, and this begins to transition into some of the things Jocelyn is going to talk about, is that it's important to recognize that when we're talking about sin, when we're talking about sloth, when we're talking about a lack of love for our neighbors, we're not just talking about one-on-one relationships. That is part of what we're talking about when we're talking about sin, but another big part of the conversation that we often ignore is communal sin, systemic sin, and communal love. So we're not just talking, when we're talking about ethics, and we're talking about Christian love, we're not just talking about individual cases or individual situations. We're talking about systems. The question is not just, what should I do in response to this particular moment, this particular crisis or loss or instance of suffering, but rather, what led to this? What is our role in the creation of this system? And how can we prevent more moments like this from happening? Martin Luther King Jr., when he's commenting on the story of the Good Samaritan in Luke 10, says, on the one hand, we're called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside. But that will be only an initial act. One day we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It is not haphazard and superficial. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. Now, case of our conversation today, we're talking about systems that lead to and support poverty. And so one of the things that we've committed some of our energy to in Lubbock is precisely that question. How do we respond to poverty in our local area? And Jocelyn she's a brilliant writer and servant and minister, and she's done an incredible job at Carpenter's Church, and so I'm looking forward to hearing her reflections on some of the work that she's done there. So here's Jocelyn.
So Carpenter's Church is kind of a Mark's talking about this idea of what does it mean to love, and this idea, the word charity originally means love, right? And in a lot of ways in our modern context, we have perverted the word charity to mean something where somebody has something and somebody doesn't have something, and the person who has something gives part of what they have to the person who doesn't have anything, and that's the extent of the charity. But that is a perverted model. That is not the Christian idea of charity as it goes back from the beginning. And part of our work at Carpenter's Church does not do this perfectly. So please don't hear us saying, we've got to figure it out, guys. I also want to say, Mark and I didn't start Carpenter's Church. We joined a church that has been in existence for almost 20 years with principles set up by people much wiser and smarter and better than we are. So, but we have been able to join in the work there and have been challenged and changed by the context there. And so today we're just going to share some of our experiences and some of the ideals that have been set up in the church from the beginning. So I need to switch it to the, how do I switch it to this?
There should be a button.
This?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to show you a video that we produced. It was produced 2 years ago, so some of the things in the video are a little bit outdated, but it's a great way to begin to see something about Carpenter's Church and who we are. And then once you see the video, I will talk a little bit more about it.
Friends that will be there for you no matter what. There are lots of places to find various material resources. but finding stable, healthy relationships comes from that. For many of us, Carpenter's Church is our primary experience of family and friendship. Another thing that Carpenter's Church does is provide permanent supportive housing. In 2012, we started providing permanent supportive housing to two men in a carpenter's house next door to Carpenter's Church building.
Hello, my name is Ismael Carvalho, and this is part of our event now. It's a board of housing by Carpenter Church. I've been homeless for about a year. The help that I've gotten and the help that I've been able to give, truly, gladly, has brought me to a place where I'm at now. I've been able to find a job, been able to start school again.
Permanent supportive housing has proven itself to be a very effective way of addressing chronic homelessness. A lot of times people may move into homes or apartments in other places, but without that support element, those environments quickly fade away. Permanent supportive housing provides that essential support to keep people in housing and do well. We often say that at the end of the day, when people have found food, clothing, and shelter, they're still left with life. And that's often overlooked when we think about homeless ministry. We often think about those material things that are so obvious, but very often we forget about the personal needs, the spiritual needs that people have. Those are found in relationship, those are found in community, and that's one of our primary purposes at Carpenter's Church.
That's my favorite thing about Carpenter's Church, is the love of God that has blessed me so much here. I mean, if it wasn't for Carpenter's Church and the people that care about me and my own addictions, my own problems, they love me continuously like Jesus loves us continuously, and they don't give up on me. That's what I love about Carpenter's Church. You know, I have real, real friends that we care about, someone like myself.
Because this is a church that I come to and rely on and be myself.
So I can't even have no self-esteem. But it didn't even build my self-esteem. I'm not going to say I'm big-handed on that, don't get me wrong. But one thing for sure is, it taught me at least to say, what's the goal of somebody, especially in this world? You do have a purpose in this world. And I thank God every day that I came here with God. I know that was his purpose and his plan.
Just come down here and see yourself what's going on down here, and you'll see it. Because I'll tell you this, you'll be blessed what you're seeing.
Church and our origins and kind of what we're doing, but then I want to spend most of our time focusing on how and why we do what we do. So Carpenter's Church was established in 1998 as a ministry of the Broadway Church of Christ in Lubbock, Texas. And Carpenter's Church started because, I don't know, many of you may know Jim Beck, who's a missionary for many years in Africa and has also worked at LCU and at Broadway Church of Christ. And he noticed that people were meeting at Carpenter's Kitchen, which is not related to Carpenter's Church, but we get our name from there because that's where it started. And it's a place that serves meals on Sunday at noon. And Jim noticed that people were getting together and hanging out outside of Carpenter's Kitchen, but they didn't feel comfortable coming into all, if you're familiar with Lubbock at all, there's tons of huge churches all along Broadway Street. And people didn't feel comfortable going to those churches on Sunday mornings for a number of reasons that we can all understand. You know, walking into a place where people are dressed nicely and there's a lot of ritual and you don't know anybody can feel really overwhelming. And so people weren't really attending church. There were some church services that were happening at Carpenter's Church, but they were happening, volunteer groups were coming in, kind of doing one-off, and there was no real community that was being developed or formed. And Jim started having lunch at Carpenter's Kitchen, getting to know people, and realized this is an opportunity and a group of people who really needed community and support and love and church, which is probably the word that would describe all of those things for most of us. And so he started Carpenter's Church. And in 1998, it became an official ministry of the Broadway Church of Christ. And for many years, was an extension of that congregation. Another church in an adjacent neighborhood donated a church building, and so they began meeting in that church building. And again, because of the context they were in, realized that a lot of their members needed a place to go during the day, and Lubbock didn't have a day shelter. And so they began opening as a community center during the day and offering places for people to hang out, classes. And over the years, things became more formalized, more structured. In 2011, Carpenter's Church became an independent 501c3 from the Broadway Church of Christ, have our own board of directors. And so kind of an interesting organization because we've been around for a long time. In terms of being an independent nonprofit, we're still rather new in terms of some of those, I don't know, nonprofit things. But we've also, in that time, really expanded our programming. So the name Carpenter's Church tends to, people, when they hear the word church, they think Sunday morning pews, singing songs, sermon, which that is part of what we do at Carpenter's Church, but we actually have quite a lot of other programming, as you saw in the video. So I think that this image, in some ways, kind of helps explain the weird beast that is Carpenter's Church. So we have Carpenter's Church, which meets on Sunday mornings, and there is pastoral staff, and there's worship planning, and all those, well, I was going to say all those traditional things, but the way that worship happens at Carpenter's Church is probably not traditional to the way that you might experience it in your home congregation. Maybe you do, I don't know. But many of the more traditional church item aspects, it's also the place where people receive a lot of pastoral care and consider themselves members of this church community. We also have our community center, which you saw a lot of images from that. It's, we have day shelter. So we're the only day shelter that's open in Lubbock. We're open 6 days a week in the summer months and 7 days a week in the winter months. And we provide showers, structure facilities, we have mail and phone service. People can access internet and computers. We have life skills classes throughout the day. We have storage. We help people get things like vital records, like birth certificates and IDs, help with job placement. We go visit people in jail. We have exercise classes. We have rest time. We have yoga. We have community cleanup, where once a week we go around and clean up, walk around our neighborhood and help clean up trash. We have chores, so people are assigned different chores that they do every day. So that's kind of what happens at the community center, and a lot of people participate in the community center that don't necessarily come to our church, though some of that does overlap. And then we also have a Housing First program, and at the end of the video, we were still calling it Permanent Supportive Housing at the time. We hadn't yet fully adopted the Housing First model, but Housing First is an approach to permanent supportive housing that has very low barriers and allows people, really the only requirements to participate in Housing First are that people meet a standard lease agreement and that they pay 30% of their income in rent. And so if they make zero income, they pay zero rent, and then it's a sliding scale from there. And Housing First is a nationally recognized best practice for addressing chronic homelessness. So all of the federal and state funding that's going towards housing for homelessness at this point is gearing towards Housing First, because it is a really effective model for helping people address their needs. So it provides housing at a low barrier, and then provides wraparound supportive services. So we have staff, case managers, we have ministry staff. We're in the process of developing relationships so that we have medical and mental health partners who are gonna help provide supportive housing and provide support for our residents in Housing First. There are some people who are just in our Housing First program. There are some people who just participate in our community center. There are some people who just attend our church. And then you can see there are some people who maybe do one or two or three of these things. So we have a few people that do all three. We have some people that just participate in maybe one or two of our programs. So in a lot of ways, Carpenter's Church has grown beyond just a congregation and provides a number of services in our community that aren't being provided by other agencies. So we can, I mean, I'm happy. I could talk about what we do at Carpenter's Church, and I do a lot in my job, and I could talk about it for hours, but I think that more important than what we do is why we do what we do. What are some of the core values at Carpenter's Church? So I think the primary core value of Carpenter's Church, that's really the heart of all of our programs, is community. We consider ourselves a Christian community development organization. So at each of our programs, relationships built on love are the heart of everything we do. And sometimes, especially to some people, that can feel frustrating because relationships are at the heart. We don't have lots of great statistics. We don't have lots of great, like, this many people receive this many services today. We just don't. We're what's called a drop-in center. In Lubbock, we're the only drop-in center where we don't have a standard, like, process for people to access our programming. People just come. They hang out. They drink coffee. They meet our staff. They don't have to go through a formal intake process in order to participate in our day shelter programming. Now, with Housing First, there is a much more comprehensive process to get involved in housing. But through most of our programming, it is about meeting people, spending time together. Our staff, their primary job is to spend time in the community center, meeting people, playing dominoes, teaching classes, leading discussions, praying, providing counseling, and helping mediate conflict, which there is a lot of that, helping separate people who need separating, and then helping work with each of the parties to try to reconcile those relationships. Again, because at the heart of what we're doing is relationships and love. And the way that this looks at Carpenter's Church, we're really working to cultivate an indigenous Christian community. So part of, we recognize that God, his people, their gifts, and the community's resources are already at work in the neighborhood and the community that we're serving. So we don't come in with our ideas and our programs and say, this is what we're going to do because this is what I think makes the most sense. But instead, we recognize that there is a host community and that most of us who did not live on the streets or grow up in poverty are immigrants to that community. We are not natives. And so a big part of our job is to listen to the native community, is to rely on their leadership, to see the resources and the gifts that this community already has, and to join in those and maybe amplify them if we have that opportunity, or maybe provide space or context for them to occur. But we do not consider ourselves people who have all the answers, and here are people who don't have the answers, and we're coming to bring the answers. But instead, we recognize that this community has immense resources. And I think a lot of times, because the people we primarily serve are not just homeless, but people who are chronically homeless. And so people who are chronically homeless, that means people who've been on the streets for a year or more, or who've had 4 episodes of homelessness in a 3-year period. So people who have complex issues, high needs, high vulnerability. And a lot of times as a culture, we look at this community and we think, oh, they don't have it together, they don't have any resources, they don't have things to offer. And the truth is, they have immense things to offer. They are just maybe different than some of the things that we might expect. And so a big part of what we do in our community building is helping people to find opportunities to share their gifts with the community and to participate, because this is their family and Carpenter's Church is their home. And so a lot of times this means that we are trying to avoid building on existing cultures of power. Those cultures of power might be things like race. They might be things like class and socioeconomics. So we recognize that as a middle-class white woman, I have education, I have experiences, I have a certain level of knowledge that I might have the tendency to come into this community and say, I know what's best because of my knowledge, because of my experience. And I do think I have things to offer the community, but the things that I have to offer are not any higher or more valuable than the things that some of our friends who maybe don't participate in those existing power structures might have. So an older woman who is African American and has been poor her whole life may not have the same dominant power structure that's giving her privilege, but she has immense gifts to provide. And so we really try to spend time breaking down some of those existing structures of power. And that can be hard. It is always a challenge. We find ourselves always butting up against any number of perceived boundaries at Carpenter's Church, race, gender. And things like race and gender really take on very significant, visceral, physical impact in a community that is living in crisis and that struggles with poverty and issues related to poverty. Race issues can become very physically tense in our community center on a regular basis. Gender issues, they come to a head often in our community center. And part of what we're trying to do always is de-escalate those and break down those power structures and help people understand that community, love, relationship, that Jesus Christ calls us to a different kind of living, and it's really hard to do. This is also hard because people see homeless ministries and they think, I want to help, I want to come, but what I want to do is I want to show up one Saturday, not even a month, I want to show up one Saturday a year, maybe two Saturdays, and I want to hand something to a poor person. That's what I want to do. And it feels good, and that's been the way that our volunteerism has often been experienced in our lives. And part of what we have to say is, no, we don't offer those kinds of volunteer opportunities at Carpenters Church. What we offer is a place for people to come. So if you want to volunteer at Carpenters Church, the first step is to come hang out with us. Come eat a meal with us on Wednesday nights for a while. You're not going to probably start volunteering right away, but come hang out with us, meet us, get to know us. Let us get to know you. And then what gifts do you have that can bless our community? So a good example is our friend Elisa, who's a photographer. She and her family started coming on Wednesday nights, and she also loves to cook. She started, after several months of coming, she started teaching a weekly cooking class and has started volunteering and providing all of our photographs for free at Carpenters Church for our marketing materials. Those are not things that we had thought. We need somebody to do our photography, but she's a gifted photographer, and she provides that to us because she's part of our community, and that was a gift that she had to share with us. Another one of our core values is consistency, and this goes back to this idea of volunteering. So again, unlike many other volunteer opportunities, we want people who can be present in people's lives on a regular basis, who we can get to know, and who can get to know us. So, you know, people who have experienced abandonment their whole lives, it can lead to expectation of abandonment. So for the first, like, 5 years the Carpenters Church was around, every Sunday or every week, people would go, are y'all still having church on Sunday? Yes, we're having church on Sunday. We have church every Sunday. But because there had been so many groups that would start, and then after a few months, oh, it's too hard, or resources ran out, or somebody moved on. Again, which is not always a bad thing, but because our friends have experienced abandonment and rejection by so many people, it's important to provide consistency, consistent people, consistent presence, consistent types of service and programs. And honestly, becoming family with people who've never experienced healthy relationships requires a long-term commitment. So not that every person has never experienced a healthy relationship, but most of our friends who are on the streets are there because of a variety of complex issues, and many of those issues stem from lack of healthy relationships. And so a big part of what our job is to be there. Be there, be there, be there, be there. And they will curse us out, and they will start a fight, and they will do things regularly and consistently. We say, okay, you can't come to the community center for a week because you were violent, or 2 weeks because you were violent in the community center. But at the end of that period, there's a reconciliation process that sit down with our staff and have some opportunity to sit down and pray together and reconcile. And sometimes that happens multiple times, but it is part of becoming family with one another. And becoming family is hard. Biological family is hard, but non-biological family, who are mostly made up of adults, who mostly have a variety of issues, all of us have issues, it can be incredibly challenging. So I like this quote, if you have come to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you have come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. This idea that don't just come help me, but come because you have something that your liberation and my liberation are joined together, and together let's work towards liberation of all of us. And I think that is really one of the key hearts of what we're doing at Carpenters Church. Another core value is imperfection. And this is hard for a lot of us. I myself am a perfectionist. But one of the things that I love and value the most about Carpenters Church is that participation is more important than perfection. And I think this is most often seen in our Sunday morning worship services. If you were to compare the worship service at Carpenters Church to any other worship service, probably, it might be surprising. And for friends, people who come in and visit the first time, it can be very challenging because it is an imperfect place. We are all imperfect people. One of our friends said it, and I think this is a great way to say it. He said that the thing about Carpenters Church, we're all sinful, but that people at Carpenters Church don't have the resources to hide their sinfulness the way that the rest of us do. And I think that that's a perfect way of thinking about it. And it's reflected in the work that we do. So when we are singing and clapping, we are often not all clapping at the same time. We are often not all singing the same key or the same words. We have people who struggle with literacy, and so sometimes scripture reading can be very slow if somebody is maybe not as comfortable reading publicly. But those are things that we love and cherish and value about our worship. Because in that participation, this imperfection, I want to put that in air quotes, because it's not perfect in the way, it's not polished, it's not always performed beautifully in the way that we might expect, but it is so precious because people are sharing their gifts with our community and it is lovely. I think that this passage from 1 Corinthians 12 really highlights one of the reasons why this is one of the core values of Carpenter's Church. But as it is, God arranged the members of the body, each one of them, as he chose. If we were all a single member, where would the body be? As it is, there are many members, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the members of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable, and those members of the body that we think less honorable, we clothe with greater honor. And our less respectful members are treated with greater respect, whereas our more respectful members do not need this. But God has so arranged the body, giving the greater honor to the inferior member, that there may be no dissension within the body, but the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together with it. If one member is honored, all rejoice together with it. This idea, again, I don't like the, even this language I find a little bit troubling, this respectable members versus unrespectable members, but I don't know how else, I mean, I'm not a translator, so I don't know how to find better translation. But this idea that we all have things and we treat each other with honor is one of the gifts at Carpenter's Church. And then for me, I think one of the other things that is probably my favorite part about, well, I don't know, there's lots of favorite parts. One of my favorite parts about Carpenter's Church, but a core value that we have is beauty and the celebration of beauty. And this might feel a little bit like kind of a hard right turn after we're talking about people who are struggling with addiction and mental illness and been on the streets for 20 years and suffering abusive relationships and any number of really hard, difficult things. And those things exist on an hourly, minutely basis at Carpenter's Church. But it is a community that can celebrate beauty and joy, maybe greater than any community I've been a part of. And this takes many forms. One of the greatest blessings for me at Carpenter's Church, again, I think my background as a theater artist, maybe this is one of the things that I'm drawn to, but this community loves the arts. Every week we have an arts class, and so people are painting, they're drawing, they're sketching, and the arts play a huge role in their passion and their love. And I think a lot of times when we think about poverty communities, we think about addressing physical needs only. We think about food and shelter and clothing. We don't think about people needing an opportunity to express their creativity. I taught a drama class in our community center a couple of years ago for a few months, and I asked people, what's your favorite thing to do? Every single person, I love to sing, I love to dance, I write poetry, I draw, I paint. And I don't think any person said, I like to punch people in the face, or I like to stand on the corner. You know, like people, the things that they like to do are the things that we like to do. They're beautiful things, and giving opportunities for people to do those beautiful things is wonderful. You might have seen in some of the shots from the video some of the artwork that's up around the building. And almost all that artwork is created by people in our community. We have a yearly art night where people can come and actually auction, buy pieces that are developed by people at Carpenter's Church. We also have a banquet where we sell art items. So artwork and beauty. But also beyond just the physical performing and visual arts, people celebrate together. When somebody has had has been sober for 60 days. Celebration when somebody has a birthday. Celebration when it's somebody's anniversary or somebody gets a job. The celebration of beauty is one of the things that I find the most lovely about Carpenter's Church. And children. You know, one of my greatest joys has been having children in this community because they are so loved by this particular group. So, oh goodness, y'all, I just realized I went over time. I'm so sorry. I thought we had 5 minutes to do question and answers. Well, I apologize that we talked a little bit long this morning, but thank you so much for coming. If you have questions, we would love to be able to talk to you for a few minutes. I also brought some brochures about Carpenter's Church. If you're interested in any of this, our information is on these brochures, and I'd be happy to follow up with you if you've got questions about what we do or who we are or anything like that. Again, sorry that we went a couple minutes over. Thank you so much for coming.